Sweet. I think we have everybody with John and Josh, and you all got the packet that Twee sent out on Friday. So I'm just going to call our September 3rd meeting to order. And the first item is to approve the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make that motion.
I so move. Then I'll second.
Thank you. Any amendments, comments, questions about the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
The minutes are approved. And then I did not see any loans in our packet today. Is that correct?
That is correct. We are working with DOJ staff on establishing a better system to get these loans to the board.
Okay. So we have no loans to approve because we have no loans in front of us, and we have no old business. We have no new business, but we do have a quarterly investment report. So, Rich, you might have gotten out of giving us kind of some bread and butter updates on loans that we got, but we'd love to hear about the portfolio is doing overall.
You know, Sarah, it comes down to some bread and butter anyway. So, you know, because following a few years of market turbulence, I'm happy to report that the second quarter was pretty quiet. You know, our portfolio report from June 30th is remarkably similar to the report from the prior quarter, with the only major change was that the investment of about $50 million in cash reserves split between new trust fund loans and the funding of prior commitments that we had made to private debt funds. During the quarter across public markets, the bonds really had no change from the beginning to the end of Q2. While U.S. stocks rose about 2.8% and global stocks increased less than 1%. Overall, it was a quiet but a good quarter, and the portfolio continues to perform well. For the entire fiscal year 24, the Common School Fund earned a record $68 million and distributed a record $65 million. We banked the difference between those earnings and distributions into the Common School Fund Smoothing Fund that has now grown to a record amount of over $40 million. And while these results suggest that our plan is working, we have talked about how the growth rate and distributions over the past few years is really not sustainable. It's just been too high, which means that future distributions will grow at a smaller and more stable rate and largely be due to growth in the amount of trust fund principal that we invest rather than an increase in the average yield generated by that those investments. We as staff can impact this growth through the generation of long-term capital gains in the portfolio. The way I look at it from a 20,000 foot level, you know, the return on all investments land on a spectrum between 100% income and 100% capital gains. In general, bonds and other fixed income securities held to maturity generate income from interest payments. And bonds do retain the capacity to generate capital gains, but if acquired at a discount or sold during their lifespan. On the other side of the spectrum, private equity and venture capital returns do not generate a dividend or interest in most cases, but will return a capital gain to investors when the underlying company is sold to other investors. Historically, BCPL is focused on investments that return interest or dividends that can be distributed to our beneficiaries. You know, our mission is to maintain significant, stable, and sustainable distributions to our fund beneficiaries. To continue this track record of increasing annual distributions over the long term, we must shift our asset allocation slightly along that spectrum to assets capable of generating long-term capital gains. But macroeconomic trends over the next few years might play even a more important role. The majority of our assets are held in investments that are highly interest rate sensitive. Over 75% of the Common School Fund is invested in fixed income, preferred stocks, and real estate. And as interest rates come down from the elevated levels of the past few years, and expectations are that the Fed will begin reducing interest rates next month, or this month now, the values of our interest rate sensitive assets will begin to rise. And then the natural rebalancing of these assets to our allocation model will require the sale of appreciated assets followed by reinvestment of those proceeds. Over the next few quarters, the investment committee will be looking at ways to best adjust our asset allocation to facilitate additional growth while maintaining a growing and stable distribution. Our $40 million smoothing fund remains a critical asset in ensuring that our beneficiaries will continue to receive stable and growing distributions through potentially turbulent markets in the near and distant future. And I hope to present results of our research with recommended proposals to the board later this year. Let's turn to the last page in the board packet. Each year, you know, I like to highlight the growth of the common school fund versus the rate of inflation. As you know, our mandate is to serve both Wisconsin school children of today as well as future generations. The only way we can make that happen is to fund principal if fund principal grows at or above the long-term rate of inflation. And I think I might have told this story before, but I think it's worth repeating, so please bear with me. Back in the 1850s, BCPL was selling land for $1.25 an acre. Federal Reserve data shows that the average annual inflation rate since 1850 has been 2.15%. If we had taken that $1.25 and invested it at an average 2.15% per year, it would be worth just over $50 today. If we had earned inflation plus 1%, that $1.25 would be worth $275 today. But if we invested it at the inflation rate plus 2%, that $1.25 would be worth almost $1,500 today. So over the past 174 years, an extra 2% annual growth increases today's value of the original investment from $50 to nearly $1,500, or about 30 times. You know, Albert Einstein was once quoted, wrongly as it turns out, but forgive me if I retweet this, that compound interest is the most powerful force in the universe. Of course, even Warren Buffett would tell you that 2% above inflation is a difficult goal to achieve over the long term. Plus, you know, the Board of Commissioners can't just shoot for long-term growth because we need a balanced portfolio able to generate income for our beneficiaries. I guess the take-home should be that growth has to remain an important factor in our long-term investing strategy. Looking at the chart on page 6, two things really pop out to me. First, the Common School Fund growth rate is declining over time. And there are at least three reasons for this. As mentioned in earlier conversations, contributions from fines and forfeitures and unclaimed property have declined in absolute terms. And as the fund grows in size, the increase from these contributions falls even greater when looking at it in percentage terms. Plus, our ability to invest in growth assets is relatively new. We've only had the prudent investor standard for a few years, while earlier investments restricted solely to fixed income. The second thing that pops out to me is that we've done pretty darn well against inflation. We are having a much greater impact on the lives of Wisconsin school children than was possible 40 years ago, and even 10 or 2 years ago. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us, but I'm very optimistic that we will continue to improve our ability to impact Wisconsin public schools for generations to come. As I mentioned earlier, the markets in Q2 remained quiet. And there haven't been a lot of changes in either the portfolio report or allocation reports this time around. So, you know, unless there are any questions about those specific reports, I'm going to spare the board and skip my normal discussion. And so I think this is a good place to stop. Does anybody have any questions or comments for today?
Rich, I just have two questions, but the first, you said that forfeiture funds have decreased in the last few years.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just asking for any insight, because I doubt forfeiture policy has changed to see a decrease, or we have fewer people with forfeitures. I would say, if anything, we probably have more with population growth.
I think what I was alluding to was a little long-term outlook on that. When I first started, I can remember that long-term care facilities were paying large amounts of forfeitures on an annual basis, and that law was changed. I also think that Denise would have a little more detail about the specific forfeitures that we get in today's dollars, but I was thinking more of a long-term trend than just something that might have been more recent.
Okay. Because we know, I mean, when we look at our overall revenue streams, one is, of course, investments, but then it's what is unclaimed property and what we get from the Department of Revenue, and then it's forfeitures, right? That's ultimately the three. And we know how unclaimed property continues somewhat predictable, unfortunately. We can, like, give or take, but it just seems like forfeitures might be a little bit of a different ballgame.
Sarah, I would agree with your assessment on the forfeitures. It's been a steady long-term decrease. When I first got here, we were running somewhere in the neighborhood of a slightly over $20 million a year in fines and forfeitures, and then unclaimed property would swing wildly from one year to the next, depending upon what was going on there. But as time went by, there were a couple of developments. One was more communities adopted municipal courts, and any forfeitures going through the municipal court would yield nothing for the common school fund, because the underlying forfeiture or fine accrued to the municipality, not to the state. And so the common school fund got nothing of that. Number two, statutes were changed. As Rich pointed out, there were some significant changes. Previously, nursing homes could be fined under both federal and state law, but most of the times they were fined under state law. This resulted in over $2 million a year in fines being added to the common school fund. The statute was changed so that a nursing home could not be fined under state law if they could be fined under federal law. But it didn't say that if they were fined under federal law, they couldn't be fined under state law. But in essence, it resulted in a lot of nursing homes not getting fined at all. Mm-hmm. And so that was $2 million in annual revenue that went away. So I remembered Denise and I putting in estimates of monthly fines and forfeitures coming in. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.4, 1.5 million per month, in addition to some of the bigger ones. And at this point, yeah, we're under 10 million a year in fines and forfeitures for the most part. So again, this has been a long-term steady decline in that area.
And do you see this, Tom, continuing to decline at this rate overall, or do you think at some point it's going to plateau?
I think we're nearing a plateau. I think the growth in municipal courts has stopped, and if in some cases has reversed a little bit, because some communities that started their own municipal court realized that they weren't taking in enough in municipal forfeitures and fines to pay for the municipal judge and the other costs of running the court. And so I haven't seen the addition of additional municipal courts. And I haven't seen changes in the statutes that would, continue to erode there. So it seems like we're reaching a plateau. The question now is there something else going on at the local county level in terms of collection of fines and forfeitures? That's an issue that's, to the best of my knowledge, never been audited. And so it's, in terms of what's going on at each particular county, I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. And then my kind of second, just I think point of information, Rich, that would be helpful for the other two commissioners is can you just remind them about the purpose of the smoothing fund and what the cap was and kind of how that works?
Sure. You know, the smoothing fund target is to be basically half of a year's distribution. It's the targeted for it's 50% of the next targeted distribution. The reason to have that smoothing fund is because when we moved from 100% fixed income to a more diversified portfolio, you know, the assumption was that we'd be taking on more risk. And the fluctuation in the amounts available for annual distributions might go down depending on the market conditions at the time. To be honest with you, I don't believe that volatility was ever there for us. I think that with our diversification within the portfolio from fixed income to include many other asset classes that contribute income, distributable income for our beneficiaries, the amount of volatility has actually gone down. When I first started with BCPL, we were 100% fixed income. If interest rates went down, you know, there would be a lag time, but that meant that the distributable income would go down over time too. I don't believe that's the case anymore. I think that we can anticipate that our distributions will be stable and increasing from here on out. But I do also believe that smoothing fund remains important because of some black swan event could happen and really disrupt market conditions.
Thanks, Rich. Any questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, we appreciate the thorough report, Rich, and overall really good news. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for the update, Rich.
You're welcome.
Our next report is from Tom, our executive secretary's report.
So I'll try to keep this as short as possible since I don't have much of a voice these days. I was at the National Association of State Trust Lands meeting last week out in Idaho, and it was interesting to see some of the developments going on. In the state of Idaho, their land commission had only managed the land for years, but actually, Idaho made the move to actually bring the financial assets under the purview of their land commission as well. Similar to BCPL, they looked at diversifying their portfolio, but their diversification was much more limited than what we've done with our portfolio. In essence, it was just stocks and bonds for the most part. And even though they have a bigger staff and bigger funding, their distribution rate for last year was 3.3%. And at the conference, this was being lauded as the new best way of doing things. And both Oregon and Colorado were heading down that road as well. I, for one, actually think that BCPL has done a much better job in terms of diversifying our portfolio while keeping in mind generational equity, trying to make sure, as Rich pointed out, that we're growing the fund at a rate equal to or greater than the rate of inflation, and providing strong and stable earnings to the current beneficiaries. But to compare that and say somehow last year we did 4.7 and 3.3 is considered fantastic for Idaho, I think we're doing better. But it does raise the issue that by doing things the way we're doing, we are going to need more resources to be able to do this. And so for our budget request this coming year, we're going to be asking for a substantial increase in resources to be able to manage the assets and report on them more easily. So Number two, any questions about that, first of all? Number two, I had the opportunity of speaking at the Town of Lac des Flambeaux meeting on Friday. Was that August 25th, I think, 24th? And although the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel somehow mistook me for our esteemed state treasurer, no, that was actually me at that meeting. And despite the differences I've had with the Lakeland Times editorials over the years, I have to give them a shout out for doing a pretty awesome job of reporting on that meeting and what was said and what was done. Fact is, the tensions are high up there. When they called this board meeting, 150 people showed up, 3 television stations. They had invited just about everyone under the sun to come and speak. But there was only a couple of legislators and myself, and then some staff members from various other entities. But as you probably have read it in the news, there is a major concern up there in that people that own property on certain lakes that are located within the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation have to cross tribal roads or tribal land to get to their properties. And the tribe is saying, no, we want compensation. And the parties are at an impasse on how to go about that. And because of the fact that we have decent relations with the Lac des Flambeaux, because of the fact that we were able to settle all of our differences back in 2022, thanks to our board and the transaction that we were able to complete, the Lac des Flambeaux had inquired about, well, is there other land that may be available in the area? So my role at that meeting was merely to state the obvious that, yes, we have land in the area, not within the reservation boundary, but close by. And while some of that land we were holding to generate timber revenue, understand the importance of trying to resolve the differences. And if the citizens of the town of Lac des Flambeaux or the title companies were to inquire about acquiring the land from us and then providing that land to the Lac des Flambeaux as compensation for access, that may be a solution to the standoff there. I made it clear that we are trust managers and we cannot give land away. And so if anything were to happen along those lines, the land would have to be appraised and then it could be sold to the town and the town could then convey it to the tribe. So that was the extent of my role at that meeting. This coming Thursday, I am being summoned to the Voight Task Force meeting of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, which is located on the Bad River Reservation. They have additional questions because of the fact that the U.S. Forest Service has expressed an interest in acquiring certain lands of ours, and certain of the tribes have inquired, well, would it be possible for them to acquire the land instead of the Forest Service? So I will be facing additional questions on Thursday. That is my briefing up to this point. I am sure there will be more information coming out of Thursday. So are there any questions I can answer for the board?
Well, I'll just say, Tom, I heard back from the reporter when we, corrected him on who was talking. He said it was a really bad quality Zoom call he was watching. He couldn't make out the names, and I guess it cut out once in a while. So that's the reason. He didn't actually mistake us for one another. I think he just didn't hear it right.
That would explain it, because he would have known that you were the much better looking person than I am.
Um, Tom, just kind of following up, I mean, knowing that the state and BCPL in particular is not a direct party involved in this matter, I guess, how do you see our role moving forward?
It seems to me that the role that we would end up playing would be more of a facilitation role than anything else. Like I said, we have decent relationships with most of the parties involved, but we are not a direct party to any of the current controversies up there. And so it was a rather late stage change that the tribe started asking about, well, how about land instead of money? And all of a sudden that brought us into the equation. And I think it was more because of the fact that the Lac du Flambeau had had a very amicable transaction with us back in 2022. I mean, it's still remarkable to think about the fact that we settled 150 some years of disputes in a matter of 45 days at that time. So again, I think it's more of a facilitation as opposed to anything else. I don't think that we would be talking about wholesale large-scale land sales. I think it would be more targeted parcels that would be close to the reservation if anything occurred there.
And there's no timeline on this because it's just a standoff right now between two parties.
In terms of the timelines, it seems like they grow and contract based upon the actions of the parties. When I was up there for that meeting, I took the opportunity of going out and inspecting some of our lands with our staff just to get a better sense of how close they were, what they look like. Do those lands provide any access to any other people? Because the last thing we want to do is create an additional problem by selling some land and creating an access problem for somebody else. But the fact is, on the reservation up there, the Lac du Flambeau have boulders standing by to be rolled onto those roads to prevent access to the citizens who own lands up there. So if those boulders get rolled into place, I would imagine timelines will shrink considerably.
I'm just going to chime in to say, based on my past interactions with a lot of people talking about the BCPL, I think you're going to have to reiterate every time you discuss this in front of somebody that the land owned by the BCPL is not state land and the state just can't promise to give it away. Because I think I'm hoping there isn't a confusion that they just say, oh, just give us the land and the state can do that. So I know you'll probably have to, I'm sure you talk about it every time, but I expect you're going to have to keep explaining what exactly this is and what the difference is between the BCPL and the state just in general.
Thank you for bringing that up. I sound like a broken record because oftentimes I will start off with something like that. But it also helps for the commissioners to know that as well, because at some point you may be asked for a comment. And it's important, I think, for the commissioners to include that statement in any comments or statements that they make to the press or to any of the parties involved. So, but yes, I am diligent in making sure that I make it clear that we cannot give land away. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you do, Tom. I'm just also confident that people keep confusing that and mixing it up. So it's the fact of life.
Yes.
Any other questions about the Lac du Flambeau and the town? Hammond, do you have anything else to share with your report, or were those the two big pieces for today?
Those were the two big pieces for today.
Well, also drink water and take care of yourself. We need you to be able to keep traveling and doing all the good things you're doing. And then I am not going to report on anything today, but at the next meeting, I think something we want to talk about is when we want to announce the Common School Fund returns. Something that we have talked about in the investment group is doing it around the same time in November. That was a really, it was a change from what we've done prior because it gives the school districts more time to know what is coming and how to prepare for it. And so that is something that we are looking at again and kind of continuing moving forward, but we'll share more at an upcoming board meeting. Is there anything commissioners would like to see at a future board meeting?
Nothing for me. Thanks, sir.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
I so move.
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor of adjourning our BCPL meeting today, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
Our meeting's adjourned. Thanks, everybody, and have a good week.
Have a good week.
Take care.
See you guys.